Go ahead. BRS meeting, Monday, January 11, 2015.
All right, let's get started. Good afternoon, everyone. And you all getting ready for the snow we're supposed to have tomorrow evening?
Snow, wait, what?
They're talking about.
A little dusting.
Yeah, a little dusting.
Is it enough to shut down the city?
Nope.
Okay, then it's all right.
All right. Nope. All right, let's get started.
Okay, bye.
I'm Roger, standing on the second vice chair of the BRS meeting. And to my left, let's go to my left.
Erin K. McMahon, Washington, D.C.
Charlie Crawford, Silver Spring, Maryland, the Access for All Committee of the Council of Governors.
Felipe Mazzell, Washington, D.C.
Cheryl O'Connor, Metro.
Morris Williams, Fairfax.
Ed Matty, Fairfax County.
Denise Rush, Vice Chair of Metro Access and Vice Chair of the AAC, Susan Brown.
Okay, all right. All right, let's start with the review and approval agenda. All right, can we all accept?
Yes.
All right, Charles, go ahead.
I move we accept the agenda.
Second.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. All right, it's been approved. All right. Anything about the prior minute meeting minutes?
Yes.
Okay, Charles, go ahead.
I noticed my distinguished name is not on the list of attendees. And I remember being here, so. And I'm also quoted in the minutes, so I guess I was here.
Okay, Charlie, this is Steve. Sorry for the error, and yes, we will add. Thank you, and that's also the moment it was Roger. Thank you.
Okay. Any other ones? All right. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All right. All right, now, public comment. All right. Patty Case.
Was in trouble. Thank you. I just wanted to, last meeting, Mr. Rush brought up a question to Mr. Cairn, who unfortunately isn't here, about we're hearing all these rumors. I mentioned things like, you know, losing the free ride, or there being some limitations to that some trips might be approved and others not, depending on the specifics of the person's disability. And where is that coming from? And Mr. Kent said, well, thank you. I don't know, since I've never made a proposal. So let me be clear about that. Because those rumors came, if you call them rumors, me. In October, Mr. Kent was set to report to the board on the Metro Access study and recommendations coming out of that. Unfortunately, board meeting ran over. He didn't get to report, but all documents were there and ready to be given out. Would be interesting. For the board members and the public. So I got a chance to read and get a copy of the I'll go ahead. There it goes. So I had a copy of that. I did get scanned in and send all of you a copy. And I have brought forth those concerns because they concerned me. Then the next month, There was indeed that report given by Mr. Kent and someone from the university where they did the Metro Access study information. But those documents are available on the website under what was given to the board meetings back for those months. So I just felt the need to clarify that they weren't coming out of the top of my head, and there are documents for you all to see to check those out. Thank you.
Ms. Rush.
Rumors, usually he knows, and most people know that they're not rumors. There's some meat to the story, and we're just trying to get and clarify what was said. And sometimes Mr. Kim dances around the question, but we know that these are were proposed to someone, the board, and we need to fine-tune what is really going to happen, not what was said, because we can read what was presented, but we need to clarify and fine-tune definitely what is being thought about and talk about and see how the board, you know, how the AAC and Metro Access and the entire board feels about what has been proposed. So, but on the public comment, I want to comment that Carolyn Bellamy had a court date this morning, and she wanted to use the rail, and she went to her station, and the elevator wasn't working, so she got out and went to another station across the street, and that elevator wasn't working. She ended up having to be shuttled to the courthouse, going to another station so she could get to the courthouse. Well, then she gets there, she's the first case, and it was dismissed. She missed her case because the elevators were not working.
Let me follow up on both comments. One, when you were speaking with Bellamy, did she tell you what station she was at that had these problems?
Well, you know, Ms. Bellamy missed her court, so she may have said it, but she was so hot, I couldn't.
I'll ask Dr. B if she can call tomorrow, and let's see the circumstances around that situation. And just in a brief follow-up to the public comment and the response to the public comment, yes, the AAC were presented, I think it was me who sent out a copy, an accessible copy of the George Mason University study that Metro sponsored. And so those ideas are listed and outlined as ideas, things of thought. But if both of you recall, following Mr. Kent's presentation, there was no directive or vote of the board to act on any of it at the moment. Some things in that study, though, were saying, just continue to do the things that we're doing. They cited the pilots in Maryland for the Human Services Agency. They cited Transport DC. They said, keep doing that. They also stated that we should maintain the three-quarters from a fixed route location as the service area. So a lot of the study was saying, Metro, you're doing a lot of good things. Keep doing it. There were a few other recommendations that Mr. Kent, myself, and our entire department recognize what needs to be discussed with each of you as stakeholders before we went forward in any official capacity. So the vetting that we do and all things with you all, and unlike, you know, I keep referring to, you know, a little tongue-in-cheek, but unlike those posters in which Access doesn't really have a whole lot of control over, let's just be clear on that. On this here, I know you're looking at me, just see my eyes looking at me. But I can tell you, yes, ma'am. But I can tell you, when it comes to the Access services, we have a lot of control over that, and the vetting will be clear, will be transparent, and you will know before anyone that we move forward on any of those other more contentious issues.
Well, the thing is, when we ask about it, or public comes and asks a question, or we ask a question, where did you all get that from? I have no idea. I don't know. That's what we're talking about.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so when we ask about it, you're like, everybody gets amnesia. Nobody's out there. Why like me? I don't know where they got that from. That's what concerns us.
Yes, ma'am. We hear you loud and clear.
Marissa had a quick comment, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Marissa?
I actually have a comment and kind of a complaint. Why is it that the road supervisor are now being sent away for these meetings? Like, when being told there are no road supervisors today because they were told to go home.
I brought this up because last month it was the same situation. Now we do have a member of Metro Access team here, but she stepped out for a second. But I'll tell you what was told to me. And if it's a challenge, we can certainly revisit, because now this will be the second time in a row, and I'll certainly bring it up with staff tomorrow morning.
Ridiculous.
Okay, you said it's ridiculous. Okay, I'll quote you on that tomorrow. But my understanding is unlike the AAC meetings and the Metro Access subcommittee meetings, the members of this committee and the members of the public who generally come to this meeting, so many are using fixed route services that the level of staffing...
It doesn't matter because when we don't have one supervisor, if they didn't have the main one, it puts more of the... Or more work on people that are already in there, that if you live for being in there, when we need you in there, or people that are on the committee get phone calls when they're not solicited, because the windows not even open to go outside. And
so let me ask you a question. So, and I'm here again, I'm going to repeat all these things. So for those of you who are veterans, either on the committee or formally, and you were catching a Metro Access trip back home from these meetings, so one thing you're saying we don't get necessarily is that phone call, because the supervisor here, they don't need to give you the call about the window.
Or
Thank you. cut you off. I think I've got it loud and clear, and I will bring up what staff.
If I might.
Okay.
If I might. If I might say, when I called in yesterday to make appointments for today, I was given two time frames. One was 5:45 to 6:15. Couldn't do that, it was during the meeting. So the only other one was 7 p.m. I had to accept 7 p.m. I didn't think much of it because the road supervisors usually make arrangements, and I usually, when the meeting adjourns, I get out of here. The night I'm afraid I may start later was 7 o'clock.
I'm gonna bring this up. The Metro Access team member, so she just went out, she's talking to her management now. We'll work this out. This is two meetings in a row, so obviously it's a concern, and I'll make sure the staff members.
It's hard to make before.
Yes, ma'am.
I know how to do it, but it's a huge disincentive to get people here.
I hear you loud and clear, Marissa. We've got a mark now, as you know, and both you and Mr. McAtee will have your points. So, Ms. Rush?
Well, this is another area, but when Dean has got here, there are no wheelchairs for me. If I knew Dean was not going to be here, she makes all the arrangements, and then they have no wheelchair. So, I can't walk very far. So, I either have to walk in here or bring my wheelchair, but I don't know that in advance, so.
Now, let me say this in a month, because as I mentioned to you all, I gained a great appreciation, even more so for Dr. B that month she was out. And so, there was one month, or one of the meetings that month, that I failed. That was one of the things I failed to do. I mean, just like you said, she knows everything she does. I know the job she has. And so, yes, I have failed to bring down the two wheelchairs. We actually do have wheelchairs. It's on my checklist now, but whenever Dr. B isn't here, it's one of the things I do. I also focus on the meeting stuff. So put that one on me just from, you know, yes, ma'am. Put that one on me. That was my part of that meeting. So I apologize for that. But it's not part of my checklist. They were right up to there. They're in my office.
It wasn't just that meeting, but was maybe two or I don't know, because
well, she did this for herself.
She was out. I just brought a wheelchair, but
okay. You don't have to do that anymore, I assure you. Even whether she's gonna be here when she is gonna be here, but whether she's here or not, the wheelchairs in my office are part of our checklist to bring down along with everything else. Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Charlie. Go ahead.
Thank you. I just have one suggestion in respect to this problem. Seems to me that the availability of Metro Access personnel when there is a regular AAC meeting, it's pretty full staff because there are a lot of people using Metro Access. When you get these meetings, there are less people using Metro Access, so it creates a situation where there's a lesser amount of demand, but not a zero amount. So it seemed to me that the best policy would be to have a system where the proportional amount of people of Metro Access would be available to the proportional amount of people of users that would be there at the meeting.
You get an argument for me on that. I don't run Metro Access, but what I'm going to do with Metro Access is part of our umbrella.
Yeah.
I brought up in the meeting last month after the Tuesday after this meeting, and you know the rationale, which I, you know, on the surface I can agree with in terms of the number of customers, but hearing Marissa, hearing Edward, and now yourself, putting it all in context, on my plate it sounds to me, let's go back to what was working when these weren't concerns, as opposed to trying to rationalize a new way. That's going to be my recommendation. Next month we'll see how our colleagues, and also I would encourage, because all of our committees are committees of the whole, many of you are going to be here next week, for that exciting meeting, I wouldn't hesitate to bring that up again.
You know, if you need extra assistance in crafting, $5,000 would be.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, all right, all right, so is that all public comments? All right, now we're gonna move to Mr. Stevens, Antonio Stevens with the ombudsman report.
Good afternoon, everyone. I don't have anything new to report based upon last month, but I'm sure that the motions that were made regarding the train car doors remaining open, I think you guys made a motion and it was passed, so I don't know what the status of that is, but I'm sure it's in the pipeline being considered. Since Ms. Case is here, I think you all may remember previously, maybe in October, she had raised a concern about some of the message boards that were located at 7th and H that were obstructing the bus pickup so that the bus operators couldn't load and unload buses. Well, it was very close to where the drop-off point is. And I raised that with one of the guys that's responsible for bus service for the District of Columbia. And he said that they would check into it, and he let me know later that it's very little they could do because, or at least that Metro could do as far as the enforcement, because it's police property. So, but they would be cognizant of the fact, and there may be something that can be done as far as, like, I don't know, Heidi, I'm sure you're familiar with the newspaper stands that are there and then the trash cans. So they're going to probably be looking at some type of realignment of those receptacles and things. Yeah, just push them down the block a little bit more. It's probably what can happen. So, and the other thing that came up, I'm trying to recall. Yeah, Elver had a concern about the waterfront elevator being out of service, and that's gone back into service. I misplaced my notes, but they said that it required a part that they weren't aware was needed because once they got, and I will read the note directly this time, it says that the conduit between the machine room and the car had corroded from being submerged for years. And the repairs were slow, but they hoped to have the elevator return to service sometime Thursday. So that was in December. So I think it's up and running now. I hadn't heard from Elver regarding that. So that's pretty much it.
Okay. All right.
Oh, and I'm sorry. One other thing was Mr. Statman, you may recall, had two incidents with the trains or these car doors, well, one that I spoke of first initially. The second one, I forwarded that information to rail, and as I reported, I believe that the doors maybe remained open about 8 seconds. Then we found out that the standard is about 5 seconds. So hopefully with the motion that you guys passed, there'll be a change. Okay.
All right, thank you, Mr. Stevens.
All right, thank you.
All right, now comes our big, big topic. Emergency exercises. All right, this is going to be for the next hour and a half. We're going to talk about the emergency exercises and discussion. And this is going to be like concerns and recommendations. All right, Ms. Rush, you want to start with experience at the Forest Lake emergency exercise?
I did the civil guard exercise and I did the stadium exercise. One was above ground and one was underground.
Sorry about that. So I guess
that it's over. I would say that the emergency people are listening to their bosses, and they need to really have an exercise with only handicapped wheelchair, people that goes, blind people, people who cannot, who are really, really handicapped, so they can experience it and understand and listen to the person. Because listening to their boss and not really being experienced with handicapping, if there was an emergency, we would have burned up or we would have really got hurt. So they need to practice with really people with actual disabilities, someone with a dog, someone who, you know, I have the electric chair, what do you do with the chair? They can't move. There are different instances that they need to practice with, not just and listen to what each person, because one person may have a bad back or surgery or something. You have to listen to the person, the individual that you are assisting, and not to your boss who's on the walkie-talkie talking to you. That's one, mainly what I would have to say.
Okay, do we have any suggestions for that?
Okay, yes, so sorry for the delay. Our team is outside. They're on their way in. Let me just set this up and tell you all the work we did to try to make this a healthy and robust, meaningful conversation for you all and for our staff so that we can move forward in a positive way. What I did is reach out to our emergency team, who then reached out to some of the first responders in the jurisdiction. I brought up the points that the BLRS and the AAC specifically have in mind. So what we're trying to do tonight, and I'm still waiting for them, but and now I'm going to introduce a special guest as well and say a couple of words, because we're bringing the whole net in as much as possible. But the waiver, your experience during the exercises, your concerns about the equipment that was used, the idea of distributing information and having one person that you as a committee and as individuals can rely on for information about what has happened, classroom training, that idea, the idea, as Ms. Rush just mentioned, the disability-only emergency exercise. These are all things I ask the staff to be prepared to listen and respond in a clear, frank dialogue. So before we bring them up, though they're here, we have also a special guest, just so you know. One individual couldn't make it. She's from the Maryland Department of Disabilities and is focused on emergency responses, specifically dealing with people with disabilities. She couldn't make it. She was coming from Baltimore. But we do have Ms. Dolores Johnson.
Scott.
I'm sorry, Ms. Dolores Scott from the from Washington, D.C. government, who also is very focused on this very issue, and she's going to be greatly involved from this point on forward in terms of our efforts with emergency exercises, but also emergency and safety for people with disabilities in general. So Ms. Scott is going to have some comments, and then we're going to bring our team. But I see the chairman would like to speak as well.
Guys, yeah, this is Pat Ching. Lawrence, I spoke with Cecilia this morning. I understand that you guys have made some very significant strides with respect to involving the entire disability community in future exercises. So I just wanted to say thank you. Cecilia speaks very highly of you, and I think that that's a very excellent step going forward.
Good evening. This is Dolores Scott. I'm with the District of Columbia Homeland Security and Emergency Management Agency. Cecilia is my counterpart in Maryland. I just wanted you to know that at H. Stigler, we want to ensure that the entire district has a fully integrated emergency preparedness plan. When it comes to exercises, we look to using people with actual disabilities, so I would love to be reached out to some of you and other groups that can help towards that end. Thank you.
And you'll have other comments later. So now, our members of our team can come forward and...
Hi, so good evening, everyone. My name is Denton Rourke. I'm with the Office of Emergency Management, part of the Transportation Metro. It's my pleasure to be here once again meeting with you all. The Director of Emergency Management, Mr. Bodmer, will be down in just a minute. We are dealing with a little rail issue over in Virginia. But he'll break away from that as soon as he can come down. And joining us this evening is Captain Russell Blinkhorn from the Montgomery County Fire and Rescue Department. He'll be here to listen to your concerns and answer questions as he can as we go along. Here's Mr. Bob, so I'll let him go ahead and put any comments he has.
Thank you, Mr. Rourke. Sorry about that, folks. We got a little piece of tractor that broke down. We're outside of National Airport, so we're dealing with that. First of all, thank you for having us on the agenda tonight. I think we have a list of items we're going to talk about. Sorry.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Stanley, are you kind of co-chairing the meeting now? If it's okay with you all, our staff first wants to quickly respond. And keep in mind, none of the representatives here today are from our legal department. So they're going to respond to the concern as best they could. And again, follow-up, we'll take time for that. But we're going to first start with their explanation of the use of the waiver.
All right, this is, I think, the first exercise that we've actually used a waiver form on our full-scale exercise where we've had some of the people outside, not only the Obama family, but the first responder family as well. It's kind of a standard practice in the region that they do waivers. I was recently, back in November, at an exercise over at the National Airport where MWA required me to sign a waiver, and I was just an observer in that case as well. We kind of mirrored our waiver with what they had. And also, District of Columbia Homeland Security Emergency Management Agency has a waiver as well. They used, as an example, of a 2014 command and control waiver that they had. So it's kind of a standard practice. We haven't done it, and to be quite honest with you, the reason we're doing it is as we get more participation from outside, the first responder family from outside, the Obama family in these exercises. We just wanted to keep up with what the region is doing. That's why we did it.
We have to ask questions?
Yes, yes, sir.
After the exception or what?
Sure, yes, sir. Yeah, you
So I did have a question. I started my waiver after the exercise. So the coordination, and I don't know exactly where it would be responsible, but the coordination of the exercise. I personally didn't have a problem with the waiver, but signing a waiver after the exercise is over doesn't make any sense. So I think some logistics and coordination as far as that concerned would be good.
Absolutely, I agree with 100% on that. Should be done right at check-in. Absolutely.
Yes, Ms. Rush.
I have participated in two exercises. I wanted to participate in the last one, but the waiver, I've worked for lawyers 36 years, and that waiver, the wording, you're signing away anything. You're signing away anything could happen, and you get on the metro every day, on the bus, you don't sign a waiver. And these things could happen, anything can happen, but to sign a waiver, they instruct me not to sign that, but I wouldn't sign it, and I won't participate, and I am one who will really participate in all of them, but I'm not signing a waiver. And I feel that way because coming down here, walking down the street, anything can happen to you anywhere, and you don't get the opportunity to sign a waiver, or nobody's putting a waiver in front of you to walk down the street and disregard anything that may happen to you. And you want to volunteer, I don't understand signing a waiver.
Answer a question.
Okay, go ahead.
Have any able-bodied people participated in these emergency exercises?
Absolutely. We certainly always try to get a group from the ADA committee that comes in to do the exercises. But I'll tell you on this one, I believe we had up to 45 extra people on this particular exercise we did at Forest Glen, which is more than we usually ever have. Most of the time, the volunteers are usually our transit police recruits that are the victims in a lot of these cases that we use. So they are a lot of employees. But this time we had a whole lot more people, not only from some local first aid groups that were up there, we had some community members that were there as well. We started.
Did they sign a waiver?
Yes.
Yes, they did.
They were requesting to sign a waiver.
Yes. Yes.
Did they do it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, ask if any more questions on the waiver specifically.
All right, any more questions on the waiver specifically?
Then on this one, what I ask the team to do is, because unfortunately, I see a lot of members aren't here, but Ms. Rush is here, but a lot of members who have participated, unfortunately, are not here yet. But this moment, we were going to ask those who participated in any of the emergency exercises, much like you did at the last meeting, and provided me with great details about your experiences, which I relayed to our staff, but I thought it would be helpful if they heard from each of you individually and very specifically about your experience, the positive, as well as those negatives you pointed out. We'll let that be a round table for a second, and then they'll respond to some of the concerns you raised.
Okay, Ms. Rush, want to go ahead and do yours again, because they weren't here earlier.
The silver lining was above ground, and the armory was below. I didn't have any problems with how it went, but the thing is that I could hear people with disabilities talking to them and saying, no, I can do this, would you do that, whatever. And they were listening to their bosses who were on the walkie-talkies instead of listening to the individual person, because all of us have different disabilities. Some can do this, some can't do that, some hurt their back, whatever. And you gotta listen to that person. You can't make them be, their back be worse than when they got on the train if you're trying to help them in an emergency. So the first responders are, you know, kind of between catch 22, but they really should listen to the individual and see what their body is allowed to do. You understand what I'm saying? And when you put us on the, I guess it's the thing that they carry you with, when they're carrying you down the tracks above ground, it's very hard I don't know what it is. You lay down and they tie you down. It's very hard if you have any ailments that are aching, they're going to really be aching when you get off of that. So maybe that carrying equipment could have some kind of padding or something so that it's not so hard to lay on. But mostly they need to listen to each individual and not listening to a person that's on the walkie-talkie about their body.
Thank you.
Okay, Patrick?
Thank you. I've got a kind of a long list. I participated, in most of them, I think I've missed one or two. I did participate in the one in Montgomery County. Several things, I think the largest thing, and this has already been said, you asked for participation amongst the 21 people of the AAC to participate in here. And we've got only a small fraction of people that participate on this, in this group. I've been before the board of directors. I've also talked to management, upper management. I believe that we've got representation from DC and also Maryland Department of Disabilities that indicate that this is not that. You don't talk to the AAC and say, well, we'll take just the AAC people. You have the hearing impaired and deaf community at Gallaudet. You have the blindness community in the Washington, D.C. area. You have so many disability groups in this area. We absolutely need to open this up, not only to the AAC, but to all the disability groups so that the next time we have an exercise, you have 25 disabled people there. It's absolutely imperative. This is not just for your first responders and for your firefighters. This is also for the disabled community who has gone out there and said they want to understand what happens and what they want to do when they come up and they have a problem on the train. They don't know what to do. They don't know what the situation is going to be like. It's an education piece backwards and forwards to the disability community. So that's one thing I'm hoping, and that's the most important thing that I would hope that we would learn from this, is that we need to open it up to the entire disabled community. You'll get a lot of education that will, I think, be very positive. Now, on the specifics of the exercise on December 13th, when the train stopped, it was 29 minutes later until I heard there was a problem on the train. Now, I understand it's an exercise, but we should have gotten word a lot faster than 29 minutes. The car behind us got the word, but we didn't get the word. We didn't know what was going on. Secondly, my wife, who actually was, I think, one of the people that was outside the AAC community and had a service animal, when she went up to the train conductor and she said, so what do I do now? The train conductor said, this is what you do. And Jane said, I want to know what my options are. The train conductor wouldn't give her options. She had an option of walking through the train, or she had an option of walking down the side of the car. She wouldn't give her the options. And that's the most important thing, is that the individuals with disabilities, first you approach them, you ask if you can explain it to them, and then you give them the options of what they have in front of them to do. None of these things were done with this communication. I would say the communication in this particular instance was very bad. The train operator, although she meant well, the communications and how she handled the situation were not effective. Now, another thing that Denise indicated, and I think this is really important, Denise said that the walkie-talkies were going on all the time. I don't want to hear these walkie-talkies. Why can't they use earplugs and have earpieces so that I don't hear them? If you have individuals on the train who have hearing aids and all that kind of stuff, all that's going to be is noise to them. But you wouldn't have known that because you didn't have anyone who was hearing impaired in the exercise. That absolutely would be a showstopper, my thinking would be. I'm not an expert on hearing impaired, but I know that a lot of background noise can be a problem. So you had communication issues. You had coordination issues. My thinking is that in Montgomery County, did Montgomery County talk to D.C. or did they talk to Virginia? It's like Montgomery County had not heard of or seen any of these issues before. I don't know if lessons learned have been passed to firefighters and first responders in the area, between the areas. And I think that would be important for, I'm pretty sure AAC would be, would like to know this. Lessons learned, what did we learn from DC that we passed on in Virginia? What did we learn, you know, that we passed on in Montgomery County? How did we do? Did we do better? Did we do worse? Another thing that I think is important. My wife had a service animal. I think that's a very critical piece. I knew that it was an exercise. I was taken care of pretty well. I was on the cart, and they took very good care of me. And I think that part went very well. For the most part, I was pleased. I think there are areas that could be improved. The interesting thing with the service animals, and I've said this before, is that I knew it was an exercise. The service animal doesn't. And so what you can learn from the service animals and how they react and, you know, either putting them on the car or letting them walk on the track, I think is very important. So there are lots of service animals in the area, lots of guide dogs, lots of disabled people that can do this stuff. You've got disabilities, you've got multiple disabilities, you've got blind people that have hearing impairments and have a service animal. Those are the people, those are the resources that we're missing out on when you say to the AAC, hey, how many of you can attend this exercise? I think the first two or three, yeah, we've opened it up to the AAC, but you've got a wealth of resources out there. People, the disabled community, just like the general public, want to be part of these things. When you have issues and incidents on the tracks, in the rail cars, it's not just the first responders and the firefighters. It's the patrons and the public that also need to know what the right and wrong things are to do. So a couple of my, those are a couple of my observations. And in general, I think the things, communication was somewhat of a problem. Organization was somewhat of a problem. I think we can learn from it. I'm excited that, you know, attempts are being made to open it up to the larger community. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we have a comment over here.
Okay, I attend one of the exercises with my lady at the State Lottery. Okay, you know, when it's time to evacuate everyone, when you're coming off, or then evacuate, it should explain what you're stepping off on. You have the little ladder that you have to step down on. It should even tell you, you know, you can either walk down or back down. I walked down and it was so short that it skipped my leg. When it was much easier for me to back down. So I think in the future that, you know, that should be implemented and exercised. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Marissa.
I was at the exercise simply because I can't get my attendants to get me up early enough to get on the track so I can race on there. But if you guys don't know where to go to get connected, other disabled individual groups connected, if you come to us, the AAC, we can get you connected with the group. You don't have to figure that out. We can do that one for you. And the more we open it up, the more disability people we can get on every exercise, the better it's going to be for everybody involved.
Excellent point.
Can I say one more thing? There also is a resource now that Vermont has started called Amplify that I think is supposed to be up to 5,000 people. Certainly, I think that you could look at, if you want to get a full-fledged exercise going, you may want to think about, I don't know how big Amplify is right now, but you may want to use that as a resource for moving forward and getting a cross-section of the community out there, disabled and non-disabled individuals.
All right, Brian? Thank you. I just wanted to add a little bit to what Patrick said with respect to the importance of listening to people with disabilities who are participating in the exercises. I was not part of the most recent one, but another exercise, I think the Fairfax County emergency responders about a year or so ago, and we had some conversations after that exercise at this committee, and I even wrote up some of my observations and comments and shared them with the committee and with the Metro staff, and I think some of that was taken to heart, but I think that the central concern that I expressed at that time was the inability of myself and others who are participating in this committee to be able to dialogue with emergency responders to talk about what our options were during the course of that that exercise. I participated in part to lend a hand and as a part of our responsibilities here as committee members. I felt that was something I needed to do, and I'm glad I did it. But after that experience, until I'm convinced that there is going to be some changes in the process, I won't participate again, because for me, I don't know that anybody's learned anything about how to work with a blind person who is in that emergency situation. And I certainly didn't learn anything as a blind passenger about what I need to do and what I can do in an emergency situation. I was not given an opportunity to explore different options of evacuation from the disabled cars. I was told I had to get on the evacuation cart. I wasn't given any options. I tried to dialogue with emergency responders and the crew that were organizing the event. And because for me, I wanted to be able, as somebody who is on this committee and is representing a lot of my colleagues here, a lot of other people in the community, I wanted to be able to explore for myself in a situation where I knew it was going to be safe because there would be people around and it was not an emergency, be able to explore what it would be like to walk down the tracks and see what could be done and what we might do together to figure out different options. And I was not given that opportunity. Nobody even asked me, well, would you mind being on the evacuation cart? We need practice evacuating people. I would have responded to that positively, and I think any of us would if it's done in a context of respect and dialogue, but we didn't get that chance. And I was disappointed to see that in subsequent emergency exercises that the same things occurred. I think if we are going to continue to participate, I think we must. We need to see those changes. And that is one of the reasons why I did not participate in the last couple of emergency exercises. I wasn't convinced that the scenarios would play out differently than it did for me. And I think we need to ensure that in a more systematic way. And then, as we've talked about, you probably talked about before I got here this afternoon, and we had previous meetings to talk about how to routinize this information and share it across the jurisdictions. Thank you. Thank you. All right, Ms. Rush.
One more thing. When we did the exercises, the people who were not hurt or were able, that were able to walk, they were loaded off first, and then the people who like myself, who were blind or were in a wheelchair, they were loaded off lastly. Well, an emergency, is that what really is going to happen?
Okay, thanks. I think we're going to try to respond at the end after we do the round table. We'll certainly come back to that.
Well, actually, I think that was probably the last comment on that, but before you respond, though, I don't see the two members who brought up
the issue of the equipment use, but are there any members who, while you may not have brought up concerns about the equipment, it was raised during the meeting. Do any of you want to speak up to the issue of equipment that's being used?
I would say the evacuation cart was a problem. You had an evacuation cart with diamond-type indents on the top, and I don't know, since that was on the top, I don't know what the bottom rack was like. But I'm thinking, if you have a service animal, and it's going to be very easy for that service animal's paws to get caught in that diamond-type mesh. So I'm wondering why, number one, you don't have a size, somewhat lifted side sword, that number, because I just rolled right off of it. I didn't know how far over I could go. And two, why is there a mat on top of that? That kind of problem, that was one of the problems I saw, and I saw that with, like I saw that could be a potential problem for service animals. Number two, and this was also brought up, on evacuating the car, I would, as Brian just said, I was told, this is what I need to do. No options were given. But also, then when I get to the rope ladder, nobody explained to me how that rope ladder was set up, how many rungs had, all that kind of information that would be useful for me to know. When my wife took the rope ladder down, she missed one of the rungs, and she was just kind of dangling there. So, although they were good at telling what to do, they really didn't describe the apparatus all that much. And then lastly, I had somebody kind of grab me and move me over to where I was supposed to be. You don't do that. You don't grab a person with a disability and sort of move them over. I lost my temper with that person, which I don't very rarely do. I said, don't touch me like that. In other words, I'm trying to say, look, if you want to work with me, you need to explain to me what you're going to do and what the options are and what's in front of me and how you want me to act. But don't push me or grab me or shove me over the front of the chest. But don't take my arm because I don't know where you're going or what's in front of me here. So that's a very important lesson I would think going forward that we would want to
Patrick, did the individual who did that, did they identify themselves as an emergency?
It was more of a, you know, they went to assist me, and I understand the exercise, I understand what's happening, but that's an easy fix.
Yeah.
So that someone comes up to you, and Brian, as I said before, someone comes up to you, identifies themselves as this person, may I assist you over here? This is what's going to happen.
This is what
Mr. Chair, can I ask a question?
What's Jay?
Go ahead. So which is not Roger. You got Roger. Go ahead, Edward.
I was just wondering, I didn't take, unfortunately, take part in the last exercise, but I understand you have this flatbed thing on the rails. It moves the body along, but to me it reminds me of a slab of ether on a thing. There are a lot of fairly reasonable, fairly light devices out there on the market. Some of them are used in high rises to go downstairs and so forth. And they strap the body in so it's safe, lightweight, so it can be carried and so forth. Has anybody ever looked into that for any of the local governments?
So, was there any more? I think, Brian, didn't you have one more comment you wanted to make?
No, I didn't.
Okay. So then, what that would take us to, and I think this will be a time they can respond to all of the comments they've heard and specific questions. And members, if you don't feel your question has been answered, you know this is your meeting, please bring it back to them. But as they're responding, I believe this is also where our team, led by Mr. Bodmer, can respond to your concerns about central liaison and also outline for you how Metro, how we plan to distribute information about these going forward, and we hope that you'll be pleased with that. So why don't we turn over to my colleagues and let them respond to your questions and concerns, and then talk about information distribution.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Captain Wilson Winkhorn. I'm the rail liaison with the Montgomery County Fire and Rescue Service. This was my first full-scale exercise in my position. I was part of the planning team for this. First, let me thank you as a committee for participating, because I can tell you that by and large, your participation from the fire and rescue standpoint was really the meat of the exercise for us. As you're aware, there were many other civilian role players that participated and that were on the train. However, they basically self-evacuated prior to the fire department personnel reaching the train, which essentially left the personnel to evacuate your members that were participating. So it was very, very big for us, a learning experience to say the least. I will say that I've read your concerns here. I've heard them today. I will say that lessons have been learned at the Forest Wind exercise. We do receive the lessons learned from the previous exercises. Those are passed on throughout the jurisdictions. One of your concerns was whether or not the personnel in the field actually get to see those, and they do. I will say, however, at least in Montgomery County, and I know some other surrounding jurisdictions, we have a large contingent of volunteer firefighters and EMTs, and that's a pretty tough obstacle to keep every single one of those volunteer firefighters and EMTs up on current training, not just with Metro, but with the whole realm of emergency response activities that we need to deal with on a daily basis. I can go through the list, but I'm not going to waste any more time here. So in terms of handling persons with disabilities on Metro trains, I will tell you that we acknowledge there is a gap in our training. Not to say that it's not talked about, but certainly through this exercise we've learned that it needs to be addressed with a little bit more depth, if you will, in our training. Will every single fire and rescue person that responds or plays in these exercises have received that training? In reality, probably not. I can train somebody today, a volunteer firefighter, and next month they can resign the position and then there's another person filling in. So it's a revolving wheel. Again, it's difficult to keep everybody on top of their training, but they do receive training with that being said. So, in my position, at least for Montgomery County, and after action to this event, we will be addressing, I will be putting together a training program on dealing with persons with disabilities on Metro trains. And that's going to be pushed out to not only those that participated, but to the entire department, in hopes that when the next exercise comes, we won't have to deal with some of the obstacles we dealt with during this one. I do want to mention, however, though, that I hope that everybody understands that our top priority during any event involving a Metro fire, specifically a fire in a tunnel like we had during this exercise, our top priority is evacuation of all passengers to a safe area. That is our ultimate top responsibility. With that responsibility, we want to make sure we get you to an area that's safe without doing any harm to you. We want to get you out of an environment that may cause harm, but we do want to get you to that environment without causing harm ourselves. To answer Ms. Rush's question about whether or not persons with disabilities will be attended to last, absolutely not. That's not the case. As you are probably aware through participating in these exercises, evacuating a train, especially in a tunnel, can be difficult. There's usually only one or two exits that we use, the front and back of the train. Side exits can be difficult, especially with those of you that are on wheelchairs. So, you know, with this compared to an event that can occur at 5 o'clock on a weekday. We had what I would consider a fairly small contingent of role players. But again, everything was noted. Everyone's being put together in a training program, and we're going to push that out. I'm going through some of the list here. I know we talked about possibly using headphones because there was too much radio traffic within the training in the tunnel. We've talked about that in the past. However, it causes a problem for us as first responders when we have headphones on or earpieces in, because it really takes away from our situational awareness. Not only are we dealing with possibly hundreds of people on a train that we need to get out, we're also dealing with a possible fire situation. And that was the case here. So anytime you enter a fire type scenario into a tunnel with a occupied train, it really changes our incident priorities. But we need to be aware of our surroundings, and that includes us being able to hear. So I don't want to limit my personnel to wearing headphones or earpieces because I think that may put us into a greater danger, but I understand your concerns. The E-Tech part I'll let my colleagues here address. However, I will tell you from a fire department standpoint, that's a very big tool for us because it is designed specifically for the rails. We use that to bring in equipment that we need to not only extinguish any fires, but also to evacuate persons, especially those with disabilities. I understand that it is uncomfortable. I've been on them myself during training exercises. We do want to make sure that we make everybody comfortable, but we also want to make sure that we don't waste any time doing so, getting you out of a hazardous environment. But it is noted. I am concerned that the committee in general does not feel safe participating in these exercises. Obviously, we want to make sure that every exercise we hold is safe, not only for you, but for us as well, us as the first responders as well. Communication is important. I understand that probably one of your greatest concerns raised here is that first responders did not take into consideration your needs. And I understand. I was there watching it. I was on the rails when we were being loaded onto the E-Tech car. I was watching the dog come out of the car in myself. So I did take notes. I saw what you saw. I understand your concerns. That was passed on to the first responders. I definitely understand your concern regarding the E-Tech car, the open grading. We do have boards we use, and that was noted in the after action as well. That's all I have in regards to the fire department response.
Can I, Patrick, go ahead?
Thanks. A couple of things. two things that might help. One, I know that when we were asked to join the exercise, we were asked, I think, in either at the end of October, beginning of November, for the exercise participation on December 13th. So we gave them like a month and a half. I was wondering if with your people, if you're going to have a group of people who are going to be doing this exercise, whether they could have a pre-brief so that they would know a little bit more of what they're going to be up against. In other words, if we know that we're going to have people with disabilities, service animals, wheelchairs, we could give them a little bit of information up front as to this is one of these are half a dozen things that you need to think about and be aware of. The other thing with my friend Cecilia Warren and Dolores, if she's still here, is they already have all this training set up, ready to go, and they have been preaching this kind of interaction with people with disabilities for a long time. So I would say that being able to work with them so that we don't have to recreate the wheel, these are professional people. This is what they do. Certainly from where I am, I'm a disabled person and I can speak somewhat from low vision or blindness, but they're experts, they're the subject matter experts, they're the people we need to talk to. And it might be good once this is done to be able to go and to maybe present
what the training is going to look like region-wide to maybe back to this committee. The reason I ask that is because Brian said something important in Fairfax over a year and a half ago, where he had one set of experiences. A year and a half later, I come to Montgomery County, same set of experiences. So I'm not convinced that the training is being uniformly taught or lessons learned being taught. So I think going to the experts, subject matter experts, who do this for a living, I think is important, so that we get uniform training that's going to go out prior to the exercise, and we'll say the same things to all people.
Well, I'm happy to report that we've actually met already. Now, this is Denton Rourke from Office of Emergency Management. We've actually already met with Cecilia and Dolores. We had a good introductory meeting where we laid out for them some of our challenges and opportunities we have to work together. They have committed to both participating on our exercise planning team, both as to help us design the exercises and also to bring in anyone from the access and functional needs community that we may need in the exercise. And they're also going to serve as some resource and subject matter experts for some training that we're going to develop. We have identified that while we do these exercises and we only reach a small group, and we do pass out the after-action reports and they get the big picture, but the theme has been consistent about the communications and how do you deal with someone with an access or a functional need. So we haven't exactly figured out how we're going to go, but we have a computer-based training initiative that we're kicking off, and we may tailor some of that to a training program specifically related to access and functional needs. And this would be a training class that would go to all emergency responders, police and fire, and other groups that we deal with across the National Capital Region. And so they're going to help us with that, Cecilia and Dolores, and we'll certainly be coming back to this group for some assistance with that as well. Right. So I think we've made an initial good first step. We have to continue, the proof's in the pudding. We have to continue to work on it, obviously.
I've learned over my life I'm not going to argue with Cecilia, so I think you get a good look. I have worked with Dolores, but I know that Cecilia will certainly give you guys a good product. So I think that's important. That's a great step. So thank you very much for that.
Certainly. And I think in regards to the equipment, the equipment is designed to be functional, not particularly comfortable. Some of that can be a challenge, and a lot of that goes back to that communications piece that a lot of you all brought to us already. The service dog is a whole another animal, so to speak, and this is the first time we've had one for there, and it was interesting to see, first of all, how would the dog, like you talked about, I was having the same thoughts, I was there as a controller, how the dog would react to the fire department, how the fire department would react to the dog. And I think eventually they did walk, they walked out.
And actually, my wife said that her and the dog were in front of the firefighter, and they were leading the firefighter out. The firefighter kept saying, slow down, we're walking, we're going.
So we have, and your experiences can differ from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. I know on the Silver Line exercises, the fire department, didn't want you to walk out. But I know at Greenbelt, we had a site for a person that walked out, and I know that on this exercise, the communications piece was lacking in the front end, they did eventually walk out on their own. So that is something that we would certainly include across the gamut in this training program. The important piece about, communicating to the person with access and functional needs, if they're hearing impaired, understanding, you have to turn your radio down while you're talking to them to keep that, all the different aspects of dealing with each particular part of the access and function needs community. So I think that should go a long way towards addressing some of the issues that we're having.
Yes, Marissa, go ahead.
Thank you. Just
something big things to keep in mind. I know that we're trying to get a triangle that everybody can see and it's hard to get everything together, but I really want you to keep in mind while a computer-based triangle can be helpful and everybody should get to see it and interact with it. This is not the immobile. You still need to have it. You want to interact with it because unfortunately thing you can get. You can get and you can have a dream. It's right here. So I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying do it in conjunction with these things. This is what happens. And with keeping safety first of all, family, I would highly suggest keeping the service animals as much as possible with the individual is obviously first one. Obviously, keeping safety is a forefront of that, but that obviously should be first choice as long as safety is not compromised.
Thank you, that's an excellent point, and I should have said that the CBT is only part of it because the hand, nothing replaces hands-on, either in a training environment or an exercise, so that's an excellent point. And I think we won't, I don't think any jurisdiction, and certainly not Metro, would not separate a service animal other than maybe perhaps to help carry him off the train and return him right. That's an excellent point.
I just want to make that known because you never know fully how many people think it's okay to separate animals and not let the individual know and not give any consideration to the animal about what's going on or what they're being shot or whatever.
Thank you very much. We'll certainly include that in the program.
Yeah, this is Ron Bonner. Just follow up. We talked, I think, Kristen, about the central liaison distribution of information and things. And I think we've missed out on that. I think we need to reach out to some help with planning exercises because before we do one of these full-scale exercises, there's a couple of tabletops that are done prior to it. And I agree with you 100% is that we need your help in seeing what we really need to exercise out there, both on the jurisdictional side of it and on your side as well. So I look forward to that. So looking for you guys on this side of the house, is do we need to become on the monthly agenda to come in here? You know, if you bring us up to talk about this, you know, these drills come up, how do you want to handle that moving down the road?
Brian? Thank you, Ryan. A comment, and first of all, yeah, thank you all for your responses to our comments and input, and what you're saying is encouraging, both in terms of the collaborative efforts you're describing as Patrick indicated, you know, what we consider to be experts in that area of emergency services for people with disabilities. That's very encouraging, and also the talk of cross-jurisdictional collaboration. You know, Metro is a regional transit system, and we need to have regional solutions to these concerns. And I think that's really important, and it's better for all of you in the long run. I think it minimizes redundancies and make sure that there's a consistency across those jurisdictional lines, but you know, within the overall Metro system. And just to follow up a little bit now to what Patrick Price was saying, and others as well, which is just that we share the same goal. We want to get off the trains and out of the emergency zone as quickly as possible. We recognize that that's your goal. That's our goal too. We don't want to be there any longer than necessary. And I think our concern and our desire here is to ensure that does happen. And I think that and as you've already acknowledged, communicating with us and with others who have a subject level expertise will go a long way to ensure that, so that those who have that expertise to share with you can help you understand how to best expedite that and also inform us as well. I think everybody will benefit in the long run. Thank you so much.
So, let me just
ask a quick
question. We have a public comment coming up, but before the public comment, I wanted to ask the team, because the question was raised, and maybe that addressed it, the idea that some members of the AAC have raised about a if I'm going to say it, I'm trying to say it right, disability-only emergency exercise. Did you address that in your comments, in your feedback?
I don't know that I addressed it directly, but I would say, right, I would respond to that and say, well, if he wants to have an emergency exercise where we specifically excluded that community, I'm pretty sure that answer would be no. We certainly get the best bang for the buck, so to speak, by including the cross gamut of metro riders. That's the best for the jurisdictions, it's the best for the commitment by the authority, and that's where we get the best from it now. I think with our efforts in reaching out beyond the AAC to the jurisdictions, we're also going to reach out to Northern Virginia. It's going to have a similar position in place shortly as what Cecilia and Dolores do, and we're going to tap into that person as well. So I think with the increased focus and perhaps participation, we'll be able to do both. We'll be able to really increase the training opportunity for both the rider and the responder, and exercise the rest of the stuff that we normally do.
Well, before we go to public comment, since the person who raised the question was Ms. Rush, and I see her sort of, are you?
Well, I want to know what the bottom line is about the labor. Are you saying going forward, anybody participating will be signing the waiver? Well, in your comments, you were saying that you have a volunteer person, and you may train them, and then that volunteer may leave, and you got to train somebody else. Are the people who are volunteering, are they signing waivers? But I just want to know what's the bottom line, because I'm on the AAC and Vice Chair of Metro Access. Even though I do not use the rail that much, I want to participate. But if the bottom line is going forward, you have to sign a waiver. I need to know that, because I represent people who.
I don't exactly have the bottom line for you. Waivers are best practice in conducting exercises. I know it's something we threw in at this last time that we didn't do it in the Silver Line, we didn't do it in Greenbelt, we didn't do it at Stadium Armory. And certainly, you've been from the forefront, one of our most active participants. So we don't want to lose that from anybody who wants to help us out. So I think Mr. Blake is still talking with council.
Right. I see you, Barbara. You can put your, I'll be around. And to avoid what you were saying earlier in the meeting, Ms. Rush, about when we answer the questions, I think the answer in terms of the bottom line, in terms of right now, is the plan to continue to request the waiver for future exercises. At the moment, that answer is yes. So we've got two public comments, but I see Mr. the chairman.
Just a point of clarification. And I said you guys meet in terms of chair. we got a partial chair.
Three of them.
The point of clarification. So who would assign the waivers? Is that everybody's participating, or just those of us from the committee course who are participating?
Everyone who participates in the exercise.
Okay, thank you.
Would be, so even if I went out there as an observer, I would have to sign. Is that correct? Yes. So yes, everybody. So we have two public comments.
I just want to mention two things. First, not compelling to
first responders. Is this me?
No. Okay.
I'll just keep going. But more to the AAC, I really support allowing community members, because one of the things that can keep people with disabilities from attempting to use fixed route services is that fear that something could happen, and that one will happen.
And this
gives them an opportunity to sort of walk through that and feel safe about, okay, they don't have to take care of me. They manage it. So I think that's a good thing. I wanted to speak to those waivers simply because, you know, you are asking for volunteers to give up a very early on a Sunday morning. And you really need them so that you, as you have been talking about. And so, I think that therefore asking them, please do this for us, and if we hurt you too bad, you know, it's indeed there's a movement
say, well, with the waiver, I won't do it, then where will we be?
Yeah, and one more public comment. Unless the members have other comments, we'll have one closing statement from Mr. Barber on this subject.
Hi, Barbara Melville, President of National Capital Assistance with Low Vision. I'm representing specifically people with partial sight, and I have partial sight myself, and you can see I don't have a cane, I don't have a guide dog, and I would like to know, please, how you folks would handle someone like me in an emergency situation, because I'm very concerned too. I ride Metro a lot. I'm really trying not to ride the paratransit because it's just not working, you know, so good for me. But I do have these concerns. Can you please answer that right now?
Well, I think a lot of that depends how you present yourself to either the whoever's there to help you. If you present, if you don't, you don't have anything that identifies you obviously as someone with an access or functional need. And if they're saying, follow these folks out, if you grab the arm or someone helps you, then you can go right out to them. If you identify that you need some assistance, and then, you know, then we rely on either the Metro folks or the emergency responders to assist you in evacuating. That could be as much as asking someone else on the train car to walk with you to wherever we're walking or whatever we're doing in that particular instance.
Okay.
I guess nobody, if you don't self-identify, no one's going to stop you, I guess.
Right.
If that's what you're asking me, I'm not.
Yes, it absolutely is, because I know our situation is very tricky, and as it is in day-to-day life, too. We're kind of in an in-between world, but trust me, there's many, many more people like us who ride the Metro, and you would not even know that we have impairments of one degree or another. And so I think that needs to be a part of the CDP training, whether, you know, you just need to say to somebody like us, even if you get a little inkling that something may be a little bit amiss with the way our eye contact is, or the way they can't hear, or whatever the case may be. There needs to be sort of a little bit of a plan or a strategy of how you're going to react, that, you know, we don't want to, if possible, to learn kind of on the fly. You don't want to be surprised when you get to someone like us. That makes sense.
Absolutely, and we'll certainly include that in all our training efforts.
And, you know, I, for one, I'm happy to come to training sessions and explain some of this. So thank you for your great work. I really, my number one priority is to get out of the situation safely. I don't really personally care if I'm on a cart or if I'm being walked out. I just want to get out, and that's a success. So thank you for your good work.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah,
I have to go ahead. Yeah, with waivers, regarding waivers, I think the only reason that disabled have an apprehension about signing something like that is because, say, in this situation, I think there's a high probability of potential injury, even in a practice situation. And in most cases, people with disabilities only have Medicaid. They don't for any long-term rehabilitation. Then you won't have no backup for anything. So it's they're thinking of what could happen and, you know, what protections they have.
Thanks.
So, Mr. Chair.
Charlie, go ahead.
Thank you. Well, I've been listening to this, and I want to, first of all, congratulate the members of the committee and Heidi and all the folks talking about waivers, because this is a serious subject. God knows I don't have an answer necessarily, the ultimate answer anyway. But I do have some thoughts on the subject. Pretty much my central thinking is that there's always two extremes to an argument. You know, one is nothing's going to happen, so why worry about the waiver? The other one is, well, what if something does happen? I'm, you know, I'm in serious problems and nobody's going to take any responsibility. So if we can agree that the circumstances are such that there is not a high likelihood of injury to people in a practice session, then it seems to me a waiver can make sense. But if there is a possibility that someone could get injured to the point where there would be an economic liability for the person who is injured, then it seems to me that we ought to have some more creative way of dealing with it than just, well, too bad it's a problem. Thank you.
Okay, so any other comments from the committee? From members? So, Mr. Barber, would you like to close us out?
Thank you, Mr. Blake. I think one of the main points that I'm taking home from this is what you were saying about don't push me, don't shove me, tell me what you want me to do. That's huge. That is huge for the responders that are coming into the scene, how to handle you coming in there. So I think that's something we gotta look at, because I certainly can understand that. Our subway system is kind of a hostile environment, especially when you get underground, it's even worse. If we put some first responders that have not been in that situation, which most of them in this region have not been in that situation, their anxiety is up as well. So it's tough for them too, coming down there and bringing all that gear. So I really understand that part of it as well. Now, enforcement exercise is the third in the series that we're doing. Remember back in 14, we did Soto Line, getting ready for prep for that. So we've done Greenbelt, we've done Stadium Armory, we've done Forest Plan, and I think our next stop is going to be Virginia, maybe possibly Alexandria, I think is what we're looking at next. I got the point that you want to do the cross-jurisdictional training. We try to do that when we get up on the station across the line. If we do Friendship Bikes, and we had the District of Columbia in Montgomery County. If we do Under the River, if we do that exercise again where we have Arlington County and D.C., or we go across the Yellow Bridge, which we've done that exercise where we're involving D.C. and certainly Arlington County again. And that's huge for us too. We don't touch a whole lot of first responder community by doing these exercises, even though we're doing poorly now. We still don't touch a whole lot of people out there. And trying to get them familiar with our system. I mean, we're trained throughout the year. I think in 2015 we trained with them. Was it almost
over
6,000 first responders in the region that we touched last year. So we're trying to make them as much as we can, but nothing takes place in the practice size that we're doing. So I know we need to continue to do that. I will tell you this, the general manager has kind of put to us after the fourth line exercise that he wants to make them a little more realistic than even what we had up there, using real timelines, setting up like we have an actual bus shuttle, running, activating our conference calls, use of spot, possibly use of the lines for the patients. So this would extend the drill out considerably. Like Dan was saying, the train operator in this particular case, this is the last one that we did, her decision was made in fact when they trained right away once they got the report of the smoking fire. Well, that's what the firefighters were seeing when they were going down to the tunnel. They were seeing all these people coming at them. And we really, we kind of wanted to hang on the train a little bit so we get the experience of pulling off the train and doing that. But that was her decision to do that. I'm not saying it was the wrong decision, but that's how that exercise kind of went a little quicker than we originally thought. So in the future, we may stop play. We may stop play, readjust, and start off again. That's something that we're looking certainly in the after-action reports that are coming in. And I hope all of you submitted your comments to our team so we can file that and get that back to you. These exercises are certainly not going to go away. We solicit your input. I know there's been a lot of talk about the waiver, but we need you to put these on because this is what the jurisdictional responders are going to come in contact with when they're responding out there. So we got to work through that little issue that we have there. Okay, so all I can do is say thank you for your support. We're looking forward to continued support on this. And hopefully, like you said, the lessons learned from the previous ones, we can share through our past real safety subcommittee with Doc, to the senior ops, and then finally to the fire chiefs, as far as some of the lessons learned and exercises in the middle. Yeah. So that's it, Pat. All right. Thank you.
Any more comments? Ms. Rush?
Something you mentioned about the timeline. On the silver line, we started about 8 and we got out about 12:30. You don't want to be up in the air that long for a two car evacuation. That means if you had an 8 car, it would be not so good. So that's a good point. Act like it's really happening and let's move with it.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, more?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, well, I guess that's wraps it up. We're pretty much done. 20 minutes over.
It's a share, it's a B. Oh, I'm sorry.
I wanted to thank the committee. You're still going on. I just wanted to thank the committee for the robust discussion, for letting us go through that kind of organized way to try to hit all the points that you had previously raised. Obviously, the meeting isn't over yet, so if you believe that there's something that wasn't touched on or anything, if you want to deal with it right now, you certainly can let myself or Dr. Bean know going forward. Safety is the priority, and Metro with accessibility a close second. So I just think we had a great discussion. It was very well organized, and I hope that you all felt that you were able to speak your minds without any inhibition. So I just thank you for the frank and open discussion.
Thanks, Chris. All right, any more?
Mr. Chair, this is Bea. I just want to, before we close, remind members that we have a AAC Fair Policy Work Group, which will be held tomorrow at the next week's meeting, Tuesday. Metro Access Subcommittee meeting is Tuesday, and so we'll be holding that meeting in this room immediately following the Metro Access meeting. And I'm not sure, Patrick, are you the chair for the Fair Policy?
Yes, I'm one of them.
Okay, you're one of them. Okay, I wasn't sure, but yeah, we just want to make sure. I did send out a reminder, but we want to make sure we have more people, and then of course, okay, members of the public are also welcome. Thank you.
All right. Are any more comments?
I have a question.
Yes, Charlie, go ahead.
Not to be totally self-interested, but you know, what's going to happen in terms of the Metro Access after the meeting?
Metro Access rides.
So normally there's Tony or somebody to come and help folks take the Metro Access vans.
Oh, there are slides. Ms. Blake is here.
He means next week.
Oh, that's back to normal. Oh, after the Fair Policy.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll make a note of that. Oh, I'll make a note of that. We'll address it.
Yes, sir.
Cool. It's back to today. Today, excuse me.
Yeah, today we have Ms. Blake here, no relation. But we have Ms. Blake here. She's with the Metro Access team, so she'll be helping. But to the question Charlie raised, in terms of there's normally road supervisors here that for the meeting that ends at 6, well, what about all the folks who'll be here up to 7? So I'm going to address that with staff. Yes, ma'am. I'll make sure we'll make a note of that. Thank you.
All right, any more?
Has a trip to 7 because they couldn't give him anything, and now we're getting ready to end, and he has to sit here.
It's like today, yes. Nobody's a road supervisor for Ed because Ed scheduled it because
things you should bring the architect room up and put me after that. Let me ask you a question. Are you a DC resident? Aren't you a DC resident?
No!
No, not you. Yeah, I'm sorry. I had the easy answer for you if you were in DC. But we don't want to start that tonight. That's going to be a robust discussion next week about marriage. Thank you for that. But let me see what we All right, we'll work with Ed on that, but unfortunately, yeah, there's no road supervisor here tonight. Is that correct, Ms. Blake? And is there any ways that... She's working on it, I understand. And you know, we Blakes like to get things done.
Oh. All right. I guess that's enough. Caller meeting tonight?
I'd like to do something. I don't get
Brian,
to
go ahead. It's very often. Brian?
And I'd like to move the leader.
Okay. All right, you guys, second for that? All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, meeting's adjourned.
Thanks, Roger.
Thank you.
Good to see you.